Session number 16788.
Commander North over Reel 3. You were just telling me how you learned to swim at Wyke Regis.
Oh, yeah, well, we were just a little village and everybody knew, all us youngsters, we all knew each other. We were cut off from Weymouth, the town. There was all fields and farms then. And we used to spend most of our time on the beach, swimming or wherever, apart from the other things like Boy Scouts and all that. But we all started at a very early age, and I wouldn't like to know, and to be honest, I should say certainly by 11 I could swim, and swim well. And one of our favourite things was between the two bridges, the rail bridge and the road bridge, it was fairly narrow, and you used to get anything from a 2 to 5 knot tide. And you were a sissy unless you could swim from one corner of this bridge and swim so you could beat the current to arrive at the corner of the other bridge. We used to do daft things like diving off the road bridge and the railway bridge, but we lived in the water whenever we could, from spring right through till it was just, I could just swim. Which brings me to a very funny thing. When I joined up as a recruit, they said, right, tonight, you've got to go down and pass your swimming test. Those that can't swim will be taught. So we went down to Pitt Street to the swimming bath. And they said, righto, everyone in the water. So, of course, I didn't think. No one had told me. I just jumped in, swam my 2 lengths I was supposed to, took off my duck suit, climbed out. He said, right, you're passed. And for the next 6 weeks, I used to have to stop in the armoury and clean bayonets, whereas, as my brother told me, if I'd said I couldn't swim, I would have had a swim. Well, that's just incidentally. Oh, yes, I could swim.
So when the ship was sunk, you had no difficulty in swimming when you were in the sea?
No, none at all. Oh, don't forget, at that time, I had a life belt. It wasn't until I gave that life belt to the chap who was in difficulties, but it still didn't worry me.
How long do you think you were in the sea for?
That I wouldn't like to say. Anything from an hour to 2 hours. I wouldn't know. Time, when you're busy and doing things like that, time is irrelevant. You don't worry about it. You do worry about not being picked up. It was nice to see that destroyer.
You said that in action stations you took an axe and a hammer with you.
Yeah.
What did you do with the axe and the hammer?
Oh, I didn't have that then because we weren't in action stations.
When the ship was sunk?
No, that was there so that if our action stations were sounded off and we went to our damage control, I used to take those two with me. The knife I always had. In fact, I got one like it out in the shed. I always had that round. Even when I slept, I had that round always.
So what was the worst part of the sinking for you?
That officer.
With those bad orders he gave.
No.
You said that your job was to see that the boats were okay.
Yeah.
What exactly do you have to do?
Well, you were designated to certain things. The shipwrights, for example. They went up onto the forecastle and they manipulated the anchor cables. As regards to us joiners, we were detailed, the four of us, so many boats each, and it was our job to be there to make sure they were lowered without any damage. And conversely, when they came in, to make sure they hadn't been damaged and that they were secured correctly. It was really not a great important thing, but it could have been in our case of the sinking, although that doesn't really matter, does it?
Now, later in the war, you joined HMS Valiant, if you can tell me how you were drafted to that ship, please, in 43.
Yeah, well, in 1942, when we came home as survivors and things were all sorted out, I was given this shore job. As I said before, living on Marshall Salt and working in the dockyard. But I also was able to have my wife with me, which was the first time we'd been together for a long time. However, oh, by the way, why, I don't know, it happened, whether someone did a dirty trick on me and worked a flanker, I don't know, because I should have had longer at home than that. But anyway, suddenly I went in one day and the shipyard officer said, I'm sorry, but you've got a draft yet. And that was it. I suddenly found myself on my way out to the Far East again to join HMS Valiant.
How did you feel about joining this ship?
Well, I wasn't very happy, nor was my wife, after being apart and going through what I'd gone through in such a short period. I know they were short of people, but there must have been others somewhere. I know of some that never even went to sea during the war, and others who never went outside of harbour.
And what was your job aboard this ship?
Well, same. I was an artisan and a joiner. I'd gone up a stage then. But again, that was a very... could you just rephrase that question again?
Your job aboard the ship?
Well, maintenance, woodwork, metalwork, boats, what have you. And, of course, damage control for action stations.
Did you see any action in the Valiant?
Well, yes. Well, that's very difficult. We carried out several bombardments of the Japanese health establishments. We covered an airstrike on the oil fields of Surabaya, Penang, and one other place. We had an American carrier with us at the time, besides our own two. We were a pretty big fleet. So really, we were down below and we didn't see very much of what was going on. Again, this business of not telling you, even in 1944 and 45, was still applicable. We didn't get told very much.
Did the ship get hit by the enemy?
No.
One incident that did happen to the Valiant in 1944 was at Trincomalee when
That's right.
it collapsed in a dock.
Yeah, it was night time. We were being, the ship was being, you know, lifted by the dock. And the dock, as far as I know, again by talk, only had about another foot to go. And suddenly the dock, there was a loud bang, and the dock suddenly split in the centre, right down both sides, and the bow of the dock came up and the stern of the dock, which smashed our bow and smashed our stern.
Where were you at the time?
I was actually ashore, as most other people were. I was at the diving school at the time. So you didn't, all you had on there was a pumping party and the people surveilling what was happening, which was a good thing, because I believe a stoker petty officer had enough sense to open up flooding valves, which lowered the other side that wasn't sinking quite so fast. In other words, brought the ship up on an even keel.
And casualties?
No casualties, touch wood, nobody at all. Those that were there, they hopped over the side, Well, I wouldn't know too much about that. As far as I know, the workmen that was on there hopped over the side and swam ashore.
Did you finish the war in the Valiant?
Yes, it took us 6 weeks to repair the damage by concrete and shoring inside, cutting away all the wreckage. All the wreckage had to be cut away. Then the inside, you found where the bulkheads were holding and the decks were in good condition, and you laid so much concrete, then with balks of timber you shored up the bulkheads, shored down the decks till you had a rigid, although you know it had been chopped away, you had a rigid forecastle. Aft, the A brackets had broken, and they had to be clamped together with huge plates, although later at Suez Canal we dropped those off. And it made the ship as watertight as was possible under the circumstances. And as I say, I think it took us 3 months to get home, because we went up to Suez. We tried to go through and ran aground. We had to be pulled off. And that's the first time I've ever jumped up and down on the quarter deck of a battleship to make her shake so they could pull her off. The captain went to Admiralty and they decided eventually that we would have to come home round the Cape. Everywhere we stopped, we had to go down below and inspect all the damage to make sure nothing had moved. We found that the glands, the stern tube glands, were leaking and they were getting water in the engine room. So on a couple of periods, we had to go down, take a plate off, go inside the little compartment and pack the outside of the glands so that the Tiffy's inside could renew the gland. And that's an interesting thing, because Petty Officer Walker, another diver, who eventually became the Lieutenant Commander Walker, who was a senior diver on the Reclaim, I think it was, anyway, the diving ship, he nearly went for a Burton there. We were down there doing this job, and it was his turn inside. Well, when you went through this round, which was just enough room to go in, you got inside, then you had to slide over the top of the the propeller shaft to get to put this packing around. Well, I didn't know this. I knew I was on a diving pump, on the manual diving pump, but Hookie was Petty Officer, or I should say Lieutenant Commander Walker, he was on the ship's air supply, and just proves how accidents can happen. My job was to be at the entrance of the compartment so that I could watch and look in to see if he was all right. If he was in trouble or if he wanted any more tools, he would let me know and I would go up and get them. Anyway, I was there watching in and I suddenly saw his air bubble stop. So I hauled myself inside, climbed over, got hold of his head and put it up, because after the diving we'd done, there was about a foot of air inside this compartment. You can understand that, can't you? The air had gone up and was trapped. So I was able to poke his head up into that, calm him, talk to him, and told him what I was going to do, which I did. I went straight back out, up to the boat. They changed over his line to the pump, which meant we only had half the air, but I was able to go down and get him up. But the tragedy of that was, he was on an airline leading to the dentist, and it must have been at 4 o'clock, I suppose. The dentist had finished with his work, and he said to the stoker, right, no more air today, and the stoker pulled the lever, and that was Hookie's air gone. That's only an incidental mine. As I say, we ran aground, and while we were waiting for Admiralty to give instructions for what we would do, this was again at Port Tewfik, the south end of the canal, we cut off the two shafts that were causing this whipping and trouble, and the A brackets, and just we had a special bloke come out that could do this cutting and with a charge, and we dropped them onto the ocean bed. And while we were waiting, we tried to lift one of them, but they were sunk in about 10 foot of sand.
This was in 45, was it?
Yeah, on our way home. And we arrived home in England just as the... when we arrived home at Devonport and went into the dock, there was all the new guns, all the new gear, all the plates, everything. They would have had us at sea again in a month, I reckon. But VE Day came, and that was it. So they said, we won't bother.
Now, after the war, you served in HMS Belfast. Now.
After the war, yes. Ah, well, there's a little bit more to that. I better carry on with 45, because in 1945, I, after leaving the Valiant, where did I go then? Oh, I was sent on a course, that's right. I was sent on a course to familiarise me with all the various trades of an artisan, with view of taking an exam to become a shipwright, which was more money and better promotion. And it was while I was on that course, my wife came up to Pompey with me, but I was on that, I suppose, no more than about 2.5 months. But anyway, I was called in the office again, by the shipwright officer, so I've got bad news for you. You've got a draft ship back to Singapore. He said, I can't stop it. He said, I've tried. But he said, here's your papers, you've passed an examination, so you're a shipwright. So anyway, I travelled out to Singapore. I can't remember for sure. I think I went by a trooper so far to Bombay to pick up a... That's where the mention of the Chinese gunboat is mentioned. You know, I went steamed there as part of a crew to Singapore. Anyway, when I got to Singapore, I found I was directed to Fleet Salvage, Royal Navy Fleet Salvage, and our job was to recover sunken ships and things in Johor Harbour. Well, I just don't know. We did get one ship up and get us successfully ashore, Johor Maru, I think it was, or something like that. But anyway. And then the civvies arrived. The peacetime had come, so then the civvy salvage people arrived and we were out of work. And that was when I went up to Hong Kong and joined the Belfast.
The reason I mention the Belfast is that it belongs to our museum.
I know, I've seen it on your letter.
Any memories of service aboard the Belfast for that reason?
Well, it was merely they were coming home, and it was a sightseeing cruise, you might say. We called in at Penang, we called in a couple of places on our way home, and eventually arrived home about November 1947 amongst the ice and snow. And with that, I went into barracks, and that was it.
Any memories of the Belfast, though?
Well, yes, it was quite a pleasant trip. I enjoyed it. There was quite a good crowd. I think that's all I ought to say at this time. I've got a table lamp in there made of Burmese teak and one or two things. Lots of other people have many things made on our way home, but I don't think that's relevant.